my opinion on transcendental idealism. It's absurd, to put it nicely. All right, I think I even have ridiculous in here somewhere. Yes, I do. Point B, paragraph 2. First, and let's think this through as logical, reasoning people for a second. I'm convinced that you will adopt the view of transcendental idealism if you believe certain things about the Bible. Okay? But there's a problem with that. That if, let's say, for instance, that you believe the Bible is telling us what God is saying to us. Well, there's an issue there. Because if God exists in the world of reality that we have no access to or even ability to comprehend, then how do we have words that tell us what God thinks? How do we know what sin is? How do we know that Jesus is his son? It doesn't make any sense just from that very simple standpoint. Now, and don't misunderstand me. We're never going to know everything about God. All right? There's just certain aspects of God, his nature, his character, that are beyond even the biggest brains on the planet, their method of understanding and conception about who he is. But that is not to say that we can know nothing about him. To say that is ridiculous. Okay? That God is not beyond our means of understanding. And we get glimpses into the reality of who he is, because that's what the scriptures are. A revelation of the reality of God. They talk about who he is, his character, his nature, all of those things. And when he says something that exists beyond the scope of appearance or the scope of the world that we live in, that is when he is graciously peeling back the curtain and showing us reality. All right? When you look at Hebrews chapter 11, verses 11 and 12, let's just look at what the writer says about Sarah here real quick. He says, by faith, even Sarah herself received ability to conceive even beyond the proper time of life, since she considered him faithful who had promised. Therefore, there was born even of one man, and him as good as dead at that, as many descendants as the stars of heaven in number, and innumerable as the sand which is by the seashore. This takes us back to Genesis chapter 18. All right, we turn back there, and we're going to spend a lot of time in Genesis tonight. Genesis chapter 18, let's look at just the first 15 verses of that chapter. Says, now the Lord appeared to him, that's Abraham, by the oaks of Mamre, while he was sitting at the tent door in the heat of the day. When he lifted up his eyes and looked, behold, three men were standing opposite him. And when he saw them, he ran from the tent door to meet them and bowed himself to the earth and said, my Lord, if now I have found favor in your sight, please do not pass your servant by. Please let a little water be brought and wash your feet and rest yourselves under the tree. And I will bring a piece of bread that you may refresh yourselves. After that, you may go on, since you have visited your servant. And they said, so do as you have said. So Abraham hurried into the tent, and Sarah hurried into the tent to Sarah, and said, quickly, prepare three measures of fine flour, knead it, and make bread cakes. I love that line, right? That is just a complete manly misunderstanding of how to make bread, right? Just throw it together and bring it out, babe, right? He took curds, this is verse 8. He took curds and milk and the calf which he had prepared and placed it before them and was standing by them under the tree as they ate. Then they said to him, where is Sarah your wife? And he said, there in the tent. He said, I will surely return to you at this time next year. And behold, Sarah your wife will have a son. And Sarah was listening at the tent door which was behind him. Now Abraham and Sarah were old, advanced in age. Sarah was past childbearing. Sarah laughed to herself saying, after I have become old, shall I have pleasure? My Lord being old also? And the Lord said to Abraham, why did Sarah laugh, saying, shall I indeed bear a child when I'm so old? Is anything too difficult for the Lord? At the appointed time, I will return to you at this time next year, and Sarah will have a son. Sarah denied it, however, saying, I did not laugh, for she was afraid. And he said, no, you did laugh. Appearances can be a powerful thing. Let's get that right out in the open. We live in a world that what you see is what you get. And so when certain things appear a certain way, we lock onto those things. And when God chooses to say, what you're actually seeing with your eyes, what you're experiencing with all of your senses isn't real, we are going to have the same reaction that Sarah had when she heard that she was going to have a child. This is actually no different than how Abraham reacted when he received the news in the earlier chapter, in chapter 17 and verse 17. He receives the news. Abraham falls on his face and laughs and says in his heart, will a child be born to a man 100 years old? And will Sarah, who is 90 years old, bear a child? And so when we choose to only live in a world of appearances, reality becomes really hard to grasp. And I think that's why at times most people have looked at the laughter of Sarah and Abraham as something that I can't quite wrap my mind around, that they will say that this is a mocking laugh as they hear the news that God is presenting to them. And I'd like to suggest that's not the case. I don't think that Sarah or Abraham are mocking God, or worse, if we're going to go down that road, this laughter is essentially saying that they're calling God a liar. Okay? So, if this had been that type of laugh, how do you think God would have handled that? How would he have reacted to be called a liar to his face? I don't think the story would have turned out quite the way that it did when we look at all of these things, that this laughter is one that comes, that is one of utter joy. I'll believe it when I see it, but this is so fantastical that it's beyond comprehension. I can't even imagine how wonderful this news is. I can't even imagine how this is going to work. I'm 100 years old. My wife is 90. But I know it's going to happen. And this seems to line up with what we read in Hebrews 11. Right? When you go back there and it says that Sarah, by faith, received ability to conceive even beyond the proper time of life. Now, she's 90 years old at this point. This is even to our way of understanding. Now, I get that the people back then, they lived a whole lot longer than we live today, and they were having babies way later than what we're having today. But we just look at it from today's standard. When a woman is 35, doctors start to get concerned about pregnancies. That they're getting to that point in their life where they are moving beyond childbearing years. And God says to Abraham and Sarah, but since we're dealing with Sarah specifically, that she's going to have a child. She's looking at herself, knowing that she's not physically able to have a child. But she, notice the line, she considered him faithful who had promised. Sarah's faith, and then her ability to conceive, is not based on the appearances, but on the reality of what God had promised and on God. And when you look at the story of Sarah, it is dominated by one word, barren. That Sarah's world of appearance is that she is barren. In Genesis chapter 11 and verse 30, we're told Sarah was barren. She had no child. In Genesis chapter 15 and verse 3, Abram said, since you have given no offspring to me, one born in my house is my heir. In Genesis chapter 16, verses 1 and 2, now Sarai, Abram's wife, had borne him no children. And she had an Egyptian maid whose name was Hagar. So Sarai said to Abram, now behold, the Lord has prevented me from bearing children. Please go in to my maid. Perhaps I will obtain children through her. And Abram listened to the voice of Sarah. Genesis 18, verse 11. Now Abraham and Sarah were old, advanced age. Sarah was past childbearing. Genesis chapter 21 and verse 7. And she said, who would have said to Abraham that Sarah would nurse children? You want to know what dominates Sarah's story? It's not her beauty. And she is a beautiful woman, according to what we're told in the text. But the one defining factor of her entire life was that she could not bear children, and that Abraham had no children from her. That's the world of appearances that they lived in for years, a long time. But in spite of all of the appearances, in spite of the laws of nature, even, okay, Sarah becomes the mother of the nations. The question that we have to ask is, why? How did all of this occur? Because when we look at things from the natural perspective and from what we see, what we're looking at is impossible. Absolutely impossible. I love this story. Sonny and I were talking about it last night because it's filled with wonderful, wonderful things. The laughter is also a part of the big picture of this story, especially considering she names her son, he laughs, Isaac. But it's not just the laughter and the joy and the experience that we see in the story, but we see a faith that breaks through the world of mere appearances into the world of reality that God has presented to them. They actually see what's going on. And it does this, and here's what is the point. It does this when it seems impossible. Because it's not based on words. Sarah's faith was based in the one who said the words. That's a faith that truly acknowledges that, as we saw in Genesis 18 and verse 14 that Brandon read to us, that nothing is impossible for the Lord. Now, I understand that that is a question in that text, but it demands a statement from us. Do we actually have the kind of faith that says nothing is impossible for God? And do we have the faith that says nothing is impossible for God and I'm going to wait 90 years for it? You think Sarah didn't want to have a baby? I know she did. You think it didn't break her heart every time she and Abraham tried and nothing came of it in the form of a child? What's the longevity of your faith? Because remember, our faith isn't based in the promises God makes. Our faith is based on the God who makes the promises. We know what God has revealed to about himself to us. We know that. It's part of our faith journey. It's part of what we do in this life. And we understand that there's part of this that is beyond the realm of our comprehension, but that's okay with us. Because we know enough from what he has revealed to see who he really is. And that's the reality that God's calling us to live in. It's the example that Sarah sets for us. And so we can be assured, as she was, that what God says, he's going to do. Whose timeline? Wrong question. Because what he said, he would do. Right? We're not to be petulant children walking around and, you know, asking God, when's this going to happen, God? Are we there yet? Are we there yet? Are we there yet? No. If he said it, he'll do it. Okay. And so we just wait patiently for that to happen, regardless of appearances. What's the strength of our faith in God's abilities? But if Sarah could have a child at 90 years old, what does that say to us? What does that say to us about the faith that we're called to have? One that's patient? One that is unwilling to accept the appearances of the physical world that we live in? Knowing that God is powerful to transcend those physical limitations to bring about what we would consider the impossible, and God looks at it and says, impossible? I did that before I had my morning coffee. Don't live your life based on the world of appearance. It's not real. Everything that we have in this world is going to be burned up and gone away anyway. Yeah, and so we can latch onto these things and we can put our faith even in what we see in appearances. And I think that's part of where Sarah faltered when she sent Abraham to Hagar, is that she was basing it too much on what she was seeing and not focusing on the reality that God had graciously chosen to reveal to her. This is the life we have. This is the call that God gives to us. Let's be a people that understand who God is and how he works. And let's live like we believe it. We're going to stand and sing the song Sam has prepared for us. Let's use this time of an opportunity as an encouragement to reevaluate perhaps where we stand in our faith and how we view God. But let's also use it as an opportunity to encourage one another to be the people that God calls us to be, to tear apart the world of appearances, to look to the reality that he has revealed for us so we can be a people of his own possession. If we can do anything for you tonight, you're ready to become a Christian and be baptized for the forgiveness of your sins, you need the prayers of the body. Whatever it is, we encourage you to come while we stand and sing.